It's easy to get lost. This is The Revenue Maze, and I'm Valerie Cobb. Join me as we navigate the halls, dead ends, and U-turns on your path towards upward growth trajectory. The Revenue Maze is sponsored by Revenue North Star, guidance and execution through fractional revenue leadership, uncovering hidden revenues, and empowering small business growth through process-driven sales customized to your company environment. Welcome, everybody, to another fabulous episode of The Revenue Maze. We have a great guest who's going to help us get out of that maze. Oh my gosh, he speaks 4 languages. And he's a family man. You'll see that in a little bit. We talk about marketing with a bear hug. And in his spare time, he is a musician, writer, teacher, and he loves management and storytelling. So we're going to have a great time today with a chief business officer from RideCell. Welcome, Samyak Punja.
Hey, Valerie. Glad to be on the show today.
I'm so happy to have you on the show today. As we talked about you being a family man, I can see your Winnie the Pooh in the background, and we talked about marketing with a bear hug. So we're gonna talk about that a little bit, but we always start with the one premise, which is how you're gonna help them get out of the revenue maze today.
Yeah, as you just mentioned, I think enterprise sales or enterprise revenue generation is an incredibly out-of-body, bear-hugging, cross-functional endeavor. So I think that's the one idea that I'd like to kind of leave the listeners and viewers with.
An out-of-body experience in enterprise. I love it. So, okay. At the end of the day, a lot of people are going to go, well, how do you have an out-of-body experience bear hug in enterprise sales? So take us just a couple of bullet points, you know, on how that's worked for you guys, because I know, and we'll talk about RideCell in a minute, but you know, you've been working with very large organizations. So take us through it.
So our current customers include some of the largest passenger as well as commercial fleets in the world. We work with customers like Toyota, Penske, Arval across 3 different continents, and these are large organizations that have been growing and, you know, doing business for a very long time. Helping them transform their business it requires a certain skill set, and folks who tend to do well in these sorts of large enterprise sales deals, they tend to exhibit a few behaviors. They are able to place themselves in the shoes of not only their customers, but also in shoes of their own team members, and then kind of look at the deal holistically, which is why I say that, hey, it's an out-of-body experience. You have to constantly keep putting yourselves in shoes of other people. The bear hug is something that we refer to in a very kind manner. It's not the traditional corporate dominant sort of bear hug that we are talking about here. It's about embracing both the customer, your own team, very, very kindly, understanding the nuances, the idiosyncrasies of the customer organization, of your own organization, and then working through it to come to a win-win solution for everyone involved. So I think that's typically how, you know, successful operators at RideCell and generally across all enterprise sales business have worked.
Yeah, and I think that's something to keep in mind, because some of the listeners are small businesses and they are trying to sell into enterprise and large organizations, and I love the analogy of walking in their shoes, but in both sides of the fence, right? Not just the customer shoes. Sometimes we will say, well, at all costs, make the customer happy. I think truly if the organization is also happy and passionate about what they're doing, then by virtue of that sends out that hug you're talking about to the enterprise customers. And anybody who has ever sold to enterprise knows it's not a walk in the park. And it takes that sort of ability to have those relationships at a level that are so genuine, not just, hey, I want to sell you something, right? Mm-hmm. Or, hey, and so if you wouldn't want it at your company, they're not going to want it either.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. And that's the cross-functional part of enterprise sales, right? You have to master the details of the deal. You have to build credibility at multiple different points with the customers. You have to build credibility internally with your teams. You have to work with engineering, with product, with customer success, with support to make sure there is. I don't want to say complete alignment, but reasonable alignment, so that you know the promises can be delivered to the customers well. We have to end up helping our internal teams be more effective so that they can level up and deliver their commitments. But I think one of the most important things, maybe the most important things that great enterprise salespeople do is they elevate the discussion both internally and externally. So let me give you an example.
A good
enterprise salesperson will kind of, you know, will have the win-win approach, will want to create value for the customer, right? But a great enterprise salesperson will take the conversation from, hey, these are the features, you know, this is what our platform can do for you, to a different strategic level in terms of, hey, this is how you can transform and get to the next phase of your business. And same thing happens internally as well, that, hey, if we help this customer in particular ways X, Y, and Z, these are the new capabilities that we are building internally for our own organization. And they constantly keep doing that. So the best enterprise salespeople that I've worked with, and I'm fortunate enough to work with some of the brightest people on our team here at RightSet, is they just have this uncanny ability to elevate the conversation. And that I think is a clincher and a big difference between the good enterprise sales professionals and the best.
Well, I think that embodies not just enterprise sales, but the entire company is enterprise sales, right? Mm-hmm. So a human might be navigating that, but the entire company has to, when you're talking about elevating, you're talking about really getting to the root of, we always say, you know, getting to the root of the need and solving the challenge, right? Mm-hmm. Versus looking at it. And I love the words that you used, holistically, right? It has to benefit. A lot of times we say win-win, but sometimes you have to have the courage to say, hey, no, that's not going to be a win for the customer, right? Mm-hmm. And it's not going to be a win for the company either. And so old Jim Kemp used to say, go for no. Well, mm-hmm. the no is the ability to say, hey, that's not really right for either one of us. So how do we elevate the conversation so it fits, so that it is that sort of bear hug that you keep talking about, right? Because it doesn't, we wouldn't, you know, as good parents, we wouldn't do anything less for our children either, right? And sometimes people forget, as soon as you're in business, it's out the door. I don't really care. I'm just trying to win this sale. And you really can't think in that light. You have to elevate. Why are they, what is the needs that are out there? And then actually listen to them, right?
Yeah.
And then listen to your own organization, see if you can deliver, see if it's something that works. Be willing to walk away both sides of the fence. And mm-hmm. I think that that's admirable for RightSell to sort of be doing that. Now, you've been, it's very interesting. We'll talk about RightSell in a minute, but the reality is you didn't just get to RightSell and this is your first walk in the park, right? Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about how you learned to do this sort of elevate the conversation, but, you know, obviously as chief business officer, you're wearing a ton of hats. How did you get to this point? What brought you here, and why would you even, you know, be talking about this today?
It's been quite a long and winding sort of journey. I've been kind of
it's the revenue maze. It's a windy journey. You're trying to help them not bump into the walls of that journey.
I've been an operator for close to about 2 decades now. I'm a software engineer and an MBA by training, and I've spent a good amount of time working on enterprise software products, and then in the automotive, farm equipment, ecosystems at two very large corporations, and that has led to one thing after another, and I've had the fortune of working with some of the best operators on both domains, on software as well as on the automotive side, the spare parts and agriculture side. And I've been associated with RightSail since its inception as a informal advisor on and off to the founders of the company. And it just led to a situation where the company was growing, and the founders wanted additional management capabilities on the team, and we had a trusting relationship. So I trusted the founders enough to make a big move in my career and in my life. I was moving countries and moving continents to join RightSail, and parallelly, the founders had enough faith and trust in me to entrust a great deal of responsibility for RightSail. So we've gone from being about $1 million annual business to significantly over that number, we've more than 10x, significantly more than 10x our business since we joined. And so that's how I've gotten here. I've also been teaching math and language to undergrad kids since the early 2000s, and I think one of the things that has helped me tremendously is just observing operators, understanding things around what kind of makes people tick, how incentives, circumstances, conditioning play a large part in how people work and operate. So I think it's been a circuitous journey, but it's been a very, very fulfilling and rewarding journey. So
who would be one of your mentors in this?
Probably say lots of people. Picked up several different things from several different people, but I've been fortunate to have very good managers who I've worked with in the past, one of my previous managers, Mr. Ashok Sharma, who is the foremost expert on quality and business excellence in the world. He's been kind of spearheading multiple efforts for our previous employer to secure the Japan Quality Medal and the Deming Prizes. I've learned a lot of business operating acumen from him. Our current CEO, Arjav, who's also the founder of RightSail, I'd say he is he's been a big part of my journey and growth at RightSail. I think I've learned the traits of relentlessness, thinking win-win, having working with obstacle is the way kind of mentality from him. And if I were to say other folks, I would probably say folks like Naval Ravikant, his thought, his thinking and his way of operating, they've influenced me in some ways, right? And then there's always wisdom, both new and old, from folks like Charlie Munger to the Stoics of the olden times. So all of these I would consider our mentors.
Well, that's really, really cool. And there's a lot of tidbits kind of hidden in the language. And I like that you say I learned business operating, right? It almost works as an organism, as an operation, right? So, and you've talked a fair amount about emotional intelligence when it comes to that. So I'm a super big fan of Shirzad Charmin's positive intelligence and PQ reps and all sorts of things, because I find that at the root of it all, it is that emotional intelligence that is so important, right, for operating in these environments and to be able to navigate through some of these massive companies as well and be good with it for sure. So I hear that we talk, I don't know, maybe I did say it in the intro, but you play three different instruments, right? So you talked about math, and music is quite mathematical. People do not always remember. I sang opera for 18 years. So, and so it makes sense that you play those instruments. Which instruments do you play?
So I play the bansuri, which is the Indian bamboo flute. I also play the saxophone and the tabla. The tabla is an Indian percussion instrument. So,
Wow. Those are very interesting. Very interesting for sure. And then, as I said, you speak four languages, which sometimes, you know, I've sung in all of them, but I can't imagine speaking four of them fluently. So you had mentioned a few of them to me before. I'm trying to remember if it was, well, you go ahead. I can't remember all of them.
So I speak a lot of different Indian languages. Gujarati is my mother tongue, so I was born speaking it. Hindi is like one of the most widely prevalent languages in India, and so you pick up Hindi by default. And then I grew up in a province called Maharashtra. So as the regional language of the province, Marathi, I kind of, you know, studied it for 10 years. And again, all three languages have a deep history of, you know, very rich literature. So those are the three languages. And I studied in the English medium. So English is almost a first language now.
Yeah, you said Ridesell got you to cover the, you know, basically move continents. And I didn't move continents, but I did live in the Cayman Islands for a number of years. And it was definitely enlightening. And you did have to get accustomed to some very different cultural aspects, which was fantastic for my kids. I mean, we had Cuban refugees pull up to the dock. We had all sorts of hurricanes and excitement's there. What's that been like for you, like jumping continents?
you know, it's awesome that you did this and we are talking about this. I think making these sorts of dramatic changes, even if it's for a limited period of time, it is very expanding in nature. Kind of, it changes a lot of your perceptions. It changes how you have been living your life from you know, a day-to-day perspective. It kind of shows you so many different and new aspects of the world that, hey, there are different ways of living, there are different ways of working, there are different ways of communicating. And if you are someone who enjoys learning and picking up new things, it just keeps adding to your repertoire of you know, things that you've learned and skills that you've honed. So I would say everyone should look to do that. Everyone should look to do that, even if it is for a small limited period of time. Changing where you live, changing industries, you know, all of these things can be very, very rewarding and expanding for the mind. There's also an element of discomfort, extreme discomfort in doing these things, but that's where the growth lies. Like the growth we seek lies beyond the comfort that we currently enjoy.
Extreme discomfort. That's, you just gave the definition to change and why a lot do not change. But I will say, I agree with you. I think if anybody can, you talked about walking in other shoes. We find a lot of times that many are unwilling to switch industries. They're unwilling to move. I don't even know what that's like. I've been in so many industries. And maybe it's because I have ADD. I don't know. And I'm just kidding. But, you know, I just love and I'm fascinated by all the cool products, all the cool things that people are doing in order to help the global community, right? And I'm a big fan of what I call conscientious capitalism, which is really, I almost would say, is the emotional intelligence for business. Period. It's an operating system in and of itself, right? Because you said learning how to reward people, how to not reward people, what is the best, you know, and then fundamentally understanding that it's okay that not everybody thinks and acts the same way you do, and embrace it versus try to force people to be you. You know what I mean? And it helps in business. I think it really helps in business for sure. Yeah.
Absolutely. I think it makes the business, it makes the organization a much, much better place, much more fun place to work at. And in fact, it transforms us as individuals for the better. In many, many ways, it transforms us as individuals. So, yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of a little bit of the foundation of why we created Revenue North Star and the various industries is going in and just our mission is always, well, my mission to start the whole thing, or my mantra, I'll just call it a mantra, is that business can change lives faster than governments can, right? So if you can go in and work and have organizations be successful and grow, then by virtue, it's step by step, it's helping others get jobs, it's helping others have promoting things in the marketplace that might not otherwise make it in the marketplace, right? Which then makes things better in the marketplace, which then creates more jobs, and it's cyclical, right? So it's an interesting sort of pact. And I'll draw the audience's attention. If they're listening, they won't know, but you've got Winnie the Pooh in the background, right? Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. Winnie the Pooh was my childhood favorite character on the planet. Sometimes I find myself in a honey jar stuck and I end up reaching out to my community to sort of help me, right? Yeah. And then sometimes I find myself as Eeyore, taking it a little slower, you know, or I'm Tigger, running. Yeah. And I love all of those characters. And I love the idea, and hopefully people that are listening love the idea of that business or marketing with a bear hug, that Winnie the Pooh, right? I mean, that fun, great organization that embraces all the differences, but then can channel that all into the benefit of their customers. I love that very much.
I think you've hit the nail on the head, Valerie, with this one. I think conscientious capitalism is beneficial to the world and mankind at large. We endeavor to do something of that sort, and I think the Winnie the Pooh is a great analogy of, you know, we have this term at RightCell where it's an informal term, we've not coined it, but it's just kind of somehow come to be, where we say we are an aggressively kind company, and we try to be you know, uncompromising on the issue, but we strive to always be kind to the individuals. So yeah, this is this is the people person in me talking now, not the enterprise salesperson.
I like it. It's aggressively kind. It feels like Tigger and Winnie the Pooh smashed together. Well, I love it. This has been so much fun talking to you today. And, you know, everybody who has been listening, they want to know, you know, if anything else, you've talked a little bit about how you were consulting at first, but, you know, tips and tricks, those kinds of things. What's the one place that would be the best place to get a hold of you today?
You can reach out to me on Twitter. I am available at the rate SamyakP, and I am always available on my email samyak@rightcell.com. So, yeah.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, fantastic. Okay. Anyways, I am so thankful for Sam. He said I could say some as short for being on the show today.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me on the show, Valerie. I had a awesome time during this conversation.
All right, everybody, this has been another fabulous episode of the Revenue Maze. Show some bear hugs today. Let comment, like, love, reach out to Sam in all of, and he will get back to you. He's an amazing person. I have just thoroughly enjoyed the dialogue of learning how we can pivot around all those halls and dead ends and turns of the revenue maze and make businesses successful today. Thank you all for joining another great episode. Hats off to all you small businesses out there. I can't wait for the next episode.